to week four and lecture number four. As you can see, it's marked here three. I don't know why it's marked three, but is it number four today or three? I can't remember. I think it's number four. Anyway, the Reformation and the Civil War, 1485 to 1688. So only 200 years this week. Only 200 years. Now, if you look at the title here, the Reformation, La Réforme, or sometimes we say La Réforme Protestante, and the Civil War, then perhaps your first reaction is, this is religion and this is politics. But you remember last week I said that religion and politics at this in this period are completely linked together, and even you could, if you wanted to be a little extreme, you could say religion is politics and politics is religion, because Protestantism very slowly brings a new vision of what society should be. And this is at the same time, the rise of capitalism and the rise of Protestantism, they happen at the same time, and this is not an accident. The new commercial classes, the people who want to make money from trade and industry and not from land, Protestantism suits them. Protestantism says every individual has a relationship with God. That's a good idea. The old religion is strict hierarchy, the Pope, the bishops, the priest, and you. And in society, the king, the aristocracy, the knights, and you. Very strict, hierarchical. Protestantism is about individualism. Of course, individualism is, today we think individualism in some ways is good, expressing yourself, and in some ways is not so good, only thinking about yourself. Let's have a look what happens to this. Now, I have put in this time a list of kings and queens. Now, normally I will put the PowerPoint on the blog. Yes, so don't worry too much about it. I don't always put a list of kings and queens. Of course, kings do make a difference. But of course, as you've noticed, I'm mostly interested in ordinary people. But at this time, it all went very quickly because Henry VIII broke with Rome. Edward was really a Protestant. Mary was a Catholic. Elizabeth was a Protestant. James and Charles were sympathetic to Catholicism. So we have this going forward and backward, which is this very messy Reformation which happened in Britain. So, first of all, to understand the Reformation, you have to understand the importance of the church at this time, in the 1500. The church, it's not like today. Today, churches, you go on Sunday or you don't go on Sunday. It's like, it's almost like a hobby and a belief system, a philosophy, and morals, etc. At this time, it's not just that. The church is an enormous landowner. The church owns millions of acres of land. It's extremely rich. The church in England is extremely rich. The church is almost like a parallel state. You pay tax to the king and you pay tax to the church. Obligatory. The church has its own tribunals, its own courts. You have the king's courts, but also the church courts. And if you want to get married or to have a burial, you must use the church. So the church is an enormous institution, almost as powerful as the king, between the two. The church is the mass media of the time. Of course, today, if you're very angry about something, you can try to launch a Facebook campaign or telephone the newspapers or the television. At this time, the church is the mass media. Everybody goes to church on Sunday, and the priest will give sometimes the opinion of the king, because the church and king are very close together, and people will often follow it. Or if there is a conflict between the church and the king, perhaps in every church in the country the priest will be saying, we think the king is wrong, and the king is very worried. The church is mass media. Now, there are divisions inside the church. and there are problems of corruption in the church, but the church is the centre of life. In fact, if you don't understand the church, you cannot understand the 16th century. It's impossible. So that's what they are. There have been criticisms of the church for a long time. That it's a big organisation, so there are always criticisms. And sometimes there have been revolts. I mentioned last week Wycliffe, who translated the Bible into English and had a rough time because of that. In France, you had the Cathars, in the south of France, the Cathars, they said everybody can be a priest. And they also said women have an important role in all this. And so, of course, they were executed, tortured, etc. Yeah? Over a long time, it was a long revolt, the Cathar revolt, hundreds of years. If you go to Albi and you see the cathedral, that's the cathedral they built when they had defeated the Cathars. Yeah? It didn't make you want to be a Cathar. Yeah. Oh, they won. Okay. Yeah. So there had often been revolts in Britain, Wycliffe, in France, the Cathars, in what is now Czechoslovakia, Huttites. Was it the Huttites? Something with Mr. Hutt. Anyway, I can't remember how to pronounce it. But they had all failed. Every big revolt had failed. And the Reformation, la Réforme Protestante, is the first big revolt which is successful. So it's not new to revolt against the church, it's new to win. And they won. And the whole Reformation, there have been hundreds of books written about the Reformation, so I have to give a very short version. One of the big leaders in Germany, Martin Luther. Martin Luther denounced, he was a monk, he was a German monk. He is considered to be the founder of Protestantism. But Protestantism, there were many different Protestantisms, and he very famously, he had a list of reforms for the church, and he went up to the church in Wittenberg and nailed it on the door, my demands. He said, here are my demands, the Wittenberg demands. He said, we need some new ideas in religion. First, the church is very corrupt. The Pope has too much power. And how did he find the justification for these ideas? He said, let's look at the Bible. Don't listen to the Pope. Look in the Bible. And of course, the Bible's a very big book, and you can find many different things in there. This was his idea. And he said, the book should be written in vernacular. So in Germany, people should read the Bible in German. And in England, in English. The vernacular is not Latin. It's the opposite of Latin. So I mentioned last week that if everybody can read the Bible, that's very dangerous for the Pope. Because they might have different ideas. They might want to debate, have individual opinions. This is not the normal thing to do. Yeah, the Pope is the voice of God. Yeah, so don't argue. Shut up. Yeah, that's the ideology of the time. Sorry, j'avais dit Huttites. In fact, il s'agit de Hussites. Voilà, j'ai trouvé. Hussites, that was the revolt in Bohemia. Martin Luther did what he could. So this is not so surprising. He had new ideas which rejected the Pope. That's not so surprising. What is surprising is he won. So why did he win? That's the interesting question. The reason he won, the fundamental reason he won, was in Germany at this time, which is not one country, it's different countries in Germany, there were the new commercial classes and their princes, and they liked his ideas. They liked his ideas because the church was enormous and rich and did not pay tax. The church was enormous and rich and received tax from everybody. Everybody paid tax to the church. And so the commercial class, it's not fair. It's unfair competition. We want a new society with trade, a new international trade, technology, improving technology. We want to move towards the future. And the church, first of all, their ideas are stopping us. And secondly, they don't pay tax, and so they're competition. And so very quickly, Luther got support in the south of Germany, the south of what is today Germany, and that moved very, very quickly. Luther was not a revolutionary, but he got support from these new groups of commercial people. Now, Protestantism is very varied. Even today, if you study America, you know there are 25 different Protestant churches, and in Britain there's many of them. So there are many different opinions. But there are some very big ideas which represent the Reformation, the Protestant Reformation. Number one, against corruption in the church. Okay, that's not too difficult to collect support about that. Who likes corruption? Nobody likes corruption. The second one is the big one. The Protestant Reformation says you all have a personal relationship with God. So you don't really need the Pope and the bishops and the priests. Now, different variations of Protestantism were more or less extreme on this. Some said, no bishops, but we want priests. We want priests, but no bishops. Some said, we don't want priests. And some said, oh, wait, we can accept bishops, but they shouldn't be too powerful. So there's lots of varieties. But the idea is there is not this monolithic situation, a personal relationship with God. And that means the priest is not so important. Because remember the Catholic ideology, I was brought up a Catholic, and the priest is extremely important. Priests do not marry. Why? Because they are more important. They are married to the church, and so on. And also, very, very important, let's move on to this one. What happens on Sunday, or at the Mass? In the Catholic idea, the priest performs a miracle. In the Catholic idea, before the Mass you have bread and wine, and at the Mass, the bread becomes the body of Christ and the wine becomes the blood of Christ. It's not a symbol. Yeah? In the Catholic religion, what happens at Mass is not a symbol. It's a miracle. And so, of course, the priest is extremely important. And the Protestants will say, no, it's important, but it's a symbol. It's symbolic. There is no real change. It's bread before and it's bread afterwards. Okay. Now, of course, today we find this rather perhaps difficult to understand. But it's the idea of the centrality of God through the church. God acts through the priest to make a real change in the bread, and it's no longer bread. And this was a very important debate and very violent debate. Many people were killed because they believed the wrong thing about transubstantiation, or transformation. Transubstantiation is the idea before it's bread and afterwards it's not bread. So this goes together. Yeah, if the priest can perform a miracle, of course he must be very special. He must wear special clothes. He must not get married. Whereas if the priest is just doing something symbolic, it doesn't matter so much. And so very often the Protestants and Catholics will be in conflict at this time, with the Catholics saying, we want very special clothes for the priest. And the Protestants saying, no special clothes. And the Catholics saying, we need gold. We need gold in the churches because this is a miracle. And the Protestants, no gold. Yeah, so there's contrast going on there. And finally, of course, very, very important one, according to Catholic ideas, when the Pope is speaking in his official capacity, he is the voice of God, and so he is always right. He cannot be wrong. And so naturally, the Protestants did not believe that the Pope could still be always right. So those are the basic ideas. There are more. For example, less separation between the priests and others. In the Catholic Church at the time, and even until quite recently, the people had some bread, the communion, and the priest had bread and wine. And so one of the conflicts at the time is it possible for ordinary people, you're not really very important, to have bread and wine, taking communion in the two kinds. The Protestants also were very angry about the selling of indulgences. I mentioned this last week. I have a document here. This means 100 years less burning in purgatory. Give me 1,000 euros and it's yours. 100 years less for only 1,000 euros. It's cheap. Yeah. If you're burning in purgatory, it's a bargain. So the Protestants did not like these things. There's Martin Luther, again, the statue of Martin Luther. And here you have a map of the influence of the different sorts of Protestantism up to 1560. In England, you can see the influence of Anglicanism. The blue is another form of Protestantism, the Lutheran. And the yellow is Calvinism. So these are different forms of Protestantism and how powerful they're getting. So you can see in France there is some influence, but in England it is completely Anglican. Okay, so let's see. This is the leader of the Reformation in Scotland. But I have to keep moving because I'm running behind a little bit. Now the kings at the time are the Tudors, and the most important gentleman here is Henry VIII, the one who had six wives and killed half of them. Lovely man. So I don't know if you've seen the Tudors. It's not really history, but it's quite good. It's quite good. I think probably the main difficulty with the Tudors is that you get the impression that all of history is because of the personal conflicts of a few very rich people, and in fact that's not true. Yeah. But it's still it's a good story. So Henry VIII is our first gentleman, and so what did he do? Well, for a number of reasons, he separated the English church from the Roman church. He became the boss. He passed a law, the act of supremacy. And he said, the Pope is not the head of the English Church, I am the head of the English Church. So, of course, this is not, you can't, if you're a good Catholic, you cannot say, I'm the head of the English Church and not the Pope. Huh? That's not the sort of thing you're supposed to say. However, Henry VIII was not a Protestant. So he divided the English Church away for political reasons. And he didn't support the Pope, but he did not have Protestant ideas. However, when he had separated the English church away, this made life much easier for English people who had Protestant ideas. Because the influence of the Pope had disappeared for the time being, and so on. So, what were the reasons for him dividing from Rome? Of course, you know the number one. He wanted a divorce. He wanted a son. Yeah, he wanted a son. And his wife was not having a son, so he wanted a divorce. Now, not in a normal situation, the Pope would have said, divorce, okay. The Pope had approved many divorces. Normally, it should not have been a problem. But there was already a conflict between the king and the Pope. And so the Pope said, no, no divorce. And the king said, okay, well, I am separating the English church from Rome. I am the head of the English church. Even at this point, it would have been possible to negotiate with the Pope. It was possible. But in fact, it didn't happen. So you got the separation. And then once they had the separation, well, Henry got some new ideas. He said, the church is incredibly rich. Maybe I should take all their money and all their lands. And this is the dissolution of the monasteries. The monasteries were part of the church, very, very rich, lots of lands. And so he nationalised the monasteries. Billions of billions, I mean lots and lots of money. And what did he do with the money? He gave it out to make new friends. This is what kings do. Yeah. Okay, so very, very big money, and some difficulties because there were some rebellions, and the Pilgrimage of Grace, donc littéralement le pèlerinage de la grâce, en fait c'est une révolte contre Henri, which defends the old monasteries and Catholicism. This is Henry VIII's home. City of National, M. Anipop. No, pas vraiment. Okay, Hampton Court Palace. It's a good place to visit. Yeah, they have a really good presentation of how it works. And here is the man himself, Henry VIII. Plus, il y avait même pas McDo à l'époque. Yeah, so this is Henry VIII, who likes, you know, give me a few deers, let's eat them up, too many chips. But of course, yes, of course, a giant of a man in his later life. Here he is again, with part of his family. Here is one of the monasteries, the remains of one of the monasteries. Because, of course, when I say Henry VIII... when I say Henry VIII nationalised the monasteries, they often nationalised them by burning them. Yeah. They destroyed many libraries. At this time, of course, books are extremely expensive. They are printed now since 1477. They are printed. The new technology is printing books. But printing a few books, yeah, one page at a time. They burnt many libraries and monasteries were lost. And so here is the ruins of one of the monasteries which still survives today. And here we have a drawing at the time of the Pilgrimage of Grace, then this rebellion. When Henry dissolved the monasteries, nationalised the monasteries, there was a revolt, especially strong in the north. And here they are. So a religious rebellion against the king. You see how religion and politics, you get very close together here, the Pilgrimage of Grace there at all, IHS, etc. So let's then Henry VIII died. It happens to the best of us. He passed his crown on to Edward. However, the problem that Edward has was he was very young. I can't remember if he was 10 years old or 12 years old or 8 years old. I can't remember. I mean, he was a little boy. Yeah? So he did, with one of the wives, he did manage to have a son. Good. Okay. So he didn't want daughters. He wasn't interested. And so Edward VI, so of course, because he was a little boy, the influence was from the regent. Il y avait une régence. Il y avait des adultes qui décidaient. Hein? And because the English church was now separate, the Protestants in the royal circles, now is the time. Now we can advance all our Protestant ideas. I like Martin Luther's ideas. What about you? Oh, I like Calvin's ideas. Oh, let's influence the king. And really, it is under Edward and not under Henry that you get creating a Protestant church in England. And here are... there are many long books about this. He did 100 things. Here are two examples. The first thing is the Book of Common Prayer. Here is a book with prayers in it. Every church must use this book. That's the Book of Common Prayer. Now, why is this important? Well, first of all, it shows there is a problem. If you need to oblige every church to use the same prayer book, that means that they disagree. For example, when you have communion, is it a miracle or is it a symbol? What does it say in the Book of Common Prayer? They have an ambiguous formulation to keep everybody happy. Yeah? And the other big change, priests are allowed to marry. So this is not just about the idea of oh les pauvres ils sont tout seuls, ils ont besoin d'une femme. Pas du tout. De toute façon, on se mariait pas par amour. Hein. Mostly, when you're getting married, it was for to increase the probability of not dying of starvation. Yeah, because you had two people to work the lands. Yeah, yeah. It's not a romantic era. Yeah. But it is about priests are the same as everybody else. Yeah, if priests can get married, priests are the same as everybody else. And so the important thing is the individual relationship directly with God. Yeah, so it's a very, very important thing. Those are just two examples here. However, of course, the other thing, look at that. Look at those dates. Sometimes dates are very important. What happened to him? Like many people, he died very young. Yeah, he died very young. And so there were only six years for these big changes to happen. And there's the Book of Common Prayer. Let's see. Seven. That's a later edition of the Book of Common Prayer. What is very impressive about the Book of Common Prayer is that it is still used today, and in many American churches, which have been invented since, the Book of Common Prayer is the prayer book today. So that's kind of interesting thing. And the very famous sentences from the marriage ceremony, you know, in sickness and in health till death do us part, this is from the Book of Common Prayer, so it's a bestseller, really. The Book of Common Prayer, and we get Mary. So Mary comes along, and she is the... So it's just one thing I need to check on, and I'll be right back with you. I get my... Oh yes, there's a little episode in the middle, just before Mary, when Edward is dying. Who's going to be next? Mary. Oh no, Mary's a Catholic. We can't have Mary. What about Lady Jane Grey? And so Jane Grey, who had some slight claim to hereditary. And so they said, Lady Jane Grey, do you want to be Queen of England? Now, be careful. In this case, the correct answer was no, thank you. But she said yes. Before she was crowned, she was executed because the Catholics were too strong. Yeah. So if anybody asks you to be Queen of England, make sure you study the situation first, okay? Okay, so Lady Jane, this is important, not because of Lady Jane Grey, who cares, but it's important because it shows there was a lot of conflict in the country, in the powerful people, they did not agree. Because if you put Lady Jane Grey in, it means you think, well, this might work, it might be successful. And then they lost to the Catholics. Okay, so Mary is a strong Catholic. But as you can see, so she will re-establish the link with Rome, re-establish Catholicism. Well, you know, the ordinary people say, shut up. Yeah, people got very confused, of course. Yeah. However, she also has a problem, and this is an accidental problem. Look at the dates. 5 years. And then she dies. Now, if Mary had had a better doctor and lived for many more years, the whole history of Britain could have been different. So what happens? The return of Catholicism. Okay, the married priests have to leave their wives. So the married priests have to leave their wives. The link with Rome is re-established. A certain number of Protestants are executed. A certain number of Protestants are executed, including Cranmer, who I will talk about in a moment. But there's a very, very big but. What about all the money of the church, and especially the money from the monasteries, all these lands, etc., which King Henry VIII gave to his friends? They are not given back to the church. See, Mary isn't stupid. Many of these rich people who received money from and land from the monasteries, they're very influential. And so Mary says that I want Catholicism again. And they fundamentally answer, okay, if we can keep the lands. Yeah. So the economics and the politics was quite complicated. But so you get the religious turn back. But without these lands and this power, the church can never be so powerful again. Yeah, so the change, the economic side of the change stays in place. So let's have a little look at Mary. Now, Mary is the last completely Catholic Queen of England. And of course, she's known with the nickname Bloody Mary. This is partly because history is written by the people who win, and the Catholics lost. She was not fundamentally more bloody than Henry VIII or Elizabeth I, etc. Executing people was the normal thing for kings to do and queens to do. She just lost. However, it can be quite spectacular. Let's have a look at this gentleman then. This is Thomas Cranmer. Now, Thomas Cranmer was a Protestant leader. He was one of the gentlemen who had, under Edward installed all the Protestant methods, yes, so changing the way that the priests dress, organizing the marriage of priests, helping to write the Book of Common Prayer, etc. He was a good Protestant man. So he was arrested and charged with treason and heresy. Donc justement, il était accusé de trahison et hérésie. Alors vous voyez bien la religion et la politique, c'est exactement ensemble. And of course, there's a political problem because Mary wants the people to agree with her, and so they really want to persuade him. And so they torture him. They're good at torturing, and they get him to agree. He signs a document: "I was wrong. Mary is right. The Pope is wonderful." Signed, Tommy Cranmer. Okay, Tommy to his friends. And so this was wonderful, a very political victory for Mary. You know, one of the biggest Protestants has changed his mind. And so they said, "We have to execute you anyway, sorry. But before you're executed, we want you to give a big speech in the church in Oxford." And so they organized this, and he arrives, and he begins to give his speech. And then he says the opposite. He says, I apologize to God that my hand has signed many things which were false. And as for the Pope, I denounce him as the Antichrist."
Donc il dénonce le pape comme un antichrist, pas recommandé. Bon, il allait déjà se faire brûler de toute façon.
So this is a terrible defeat for Mary, political defeat for Mary. But it shows the importance of politics. That is, that Mary did not just execute Cranmer. No, so get Cranmer to give a public speech to say this will persuade a lot of people. So a lot of people are not sure. Yeah, and so if you can have a big symbolic capitulation, that's very good. And at the end, Cranmer said, "When I am going to burn, I want my right hand to burn first, because it has signed all these terrible things."
Le sens, la formule, hein, quand même. Hein. Même Mélenchon, il n'y arriverait pas.
Okay, so Thomas Cranmer. And here you have a painting of Cranmer's execution. And you can see he's holding out his right hand. So his hand is burnt before the rest. Okay, so very, very exciting stuff there. Now, many other, a certain number of other Protestants were executed, here are some drawings, and the executions by Mary the First were used for, even today, used by Protestants to show, you know, how terrible Catholicism is. And here you have an example, and I don't know if you can see, but this is a woman, and she was pregnant. This is the story. We don't know if it's true, but the woman is pregnant, and when she is burning, her baby is born. And the baby falls out of the fire, and one of the soldiers picks up the baby and throws it back into the fire. Yes, it's Stephen King. I say, don't fail, littéralement. Okay. So the story, and there's another one there. Babies, old babies being burnt, and so on. This is from a book called Fox's Book of Martyrs, but of course some of it is true and some of it is propaganda. Like most documents, you have to look very carefully at what's going on. In any case, Mary dies and Elizabeth I becomes Queen of England. And the most important thing about Elizabeth I is, again, look at the dates. 50 years, not 5 years, 50 years. So she's lucky. She is able, therefore, to stabilize the Anglican Church.
Je vais mettre le PowerPoint sur après, alors ne vous en faites pas trop pour chaque détail.
So she manages to stable, in fact, a compromise. Yeah, you've got the Catholics, you've got the Protestants, and she goes for a compromise. But here you have elements of the compromise. Attending Anglican services is obligatory. Yeah, you must go to Anglican Church on Sunday. So, privately in your own home, you can be a Catholic or a dissenter if you keep your mouth shut. But on Sunday, you must go to the Anglican service. Otherwise, you pay a fine. Secondly, a new Book of Common Prayer. Not very different to the old one, but a little different. And the 39 articles. The 39 articles are a list of things you must believe if you're an Anglican. And it's practically almost the same today. It's almost the same today. So that's the Anglican Church. An interesting idea, 39 articles. It's not very many. The idea of the Anglican Church is we want to include a lot of different opinions. And even today, in the Anglican Church in Britain, you have a lot of different opinions. The Anglican Church today has 25% of the priests are women, for example, which in Christian churches is very unusual. And at the same time, in the Anglican Church, you have people who are against women priests and follow the Pope. It's a very broad church. But she did continue repressing Catholics and dissenters. So here you have the Church of England. Over here you have the Catholics, very often secret Catholics. And little by little, Elizabeth will be repressing them. So little by little, because you've got to take your time. So it will become illegal to become a priest. Then it will become illegal to have Catholic services and so on. This is also partly because the Catholics are interested in Spain. And Spain is the enemy of England. And so Elizabeth and her friends are thinking, oh, the Catholics, they probably support Spain more than they support England. Yeah, so that's a dangerous thing. And on the other side, the dissenters. The dissenters are people who think the Reformation is very good, but we must go much further. We need much more reform. And these are the people who, for example, 50 years later, will go to America. On dit les puritains qui ont fondé en Amérique. Au sens le plus strict, ça devrait être dissenters. Les puritains, au sens strict, c'est les gens qui voulaient réformer l'Église d'Angleterre. Et les dissenters, c'est ceux qui pensaient qu'il n'y avait rien à réformer, il fallait le jeter à la poubelle. Alors, strict au sens sauf, c'était des dissenters. Okay, so, here you have Elizabeth I, then, in her Sunday dress. The 39 articles, a much later edition of them. And just for a little bit of variety, this is one of the Catholics who was executed by Elizabeth I. Now, this is interesting because I went to a Catholic school in Britain, they told us the story of all these wonderful Catholics who were executed by Elizabeth. And of course, in the Protestant school, they told them the story of all these wonderful Protestants who were executed by Mary. But it was all a little bit strange when I was little, because we used to sing songs. And one of the songs was, I would love to be executed for my faith just like the people in the past. And I'm like, I'm not sure about this question. You know, how sweet would be thy children's fate if they, like them, could die for thee? And we're looking at each other. Is this obligatory? Yeah, it's a little bit scary. There's another one. These are Catholics executed by, famous Catholics executed by Elizabeth. Okay, so of course, that is 50 years, so that's a long time. That's a long time. And she made a lot of progress in stabilizing the church. And of course, 50 years later, well, the Catholics were hiding away, really, to some extent, and the situation was relatively stable. So from one point of view, this has been considered a success, because there was a real danger of civil war, and so not having a civil war is generally considered to be a good thing. Now, when you get a new king, James I, well, that's wonderful. So everybody, we have a new king. Maybe things will change now. And in particular, in 1603, you get the Millennium Petition. So what's the Millennium Petition? Well, this is the Puritans. So you have the Church of England. Inside the Church of England, you have the traditionalists and the Puritans. We want more Protestantism inside the Church of England. Outside the Church of England, you have the Catholics and the dissenters. Okay, so the Puritans, who want more Protestantism, signed a petition. We want more change. We don't want special clothes for the priests. Because if they have special clothes, they're special. That's Catholic ideas. We don't like that. And so that was one of the things they were very much against, what we call vestments. A lot of vestments, ce sont des vêtements particuliers pour les prêtres. And so they were against vestments. Because if you have different vestments for the priest, they're too special. And the other thing which they were against is this, the wedding ring. If you look in the Bible, what does it say in the Bible about wedding rings? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's not a Christian tradition. But in church, you exchange wedding rings, you know, gold. Ooh, this is not very Protestantism. Some say, we want the abolition of wedding rings. There you go. Vestments, wedding rings. Picture. They hoped that the new king would be more sympathetic, but no, he said no. He said no to these changes, no changes. But he did make one very big concession. He said, we want a new official translation of the Bible into English. The King James Bible. He didn't translate it. He just gave permission. The King James Bible is still today a bestseller. There you go, the Holy Bible containing the Old and New Testaments, translated out of the original tongues and with the former translations by His Majesty's special command, appointed to be read in churches. Yeah. So, this very, very important victory for the Puritans, the King James Bible. James the First, there you go, that's a book, a letter about the translation. James had another problem. James had another characteristic, he was tempted to do things in the same way as the French kings. Yeah, he wanted more absolute power. He got this idea to move a little closer to Catholic ideas would be more hierarchy. And if there's more hierarchy, the king will be stronger. And so there was more and more conflict between James and the Parliament. So at this time, we now have a Parliament which is elected, but not by the people, only by the very rich. Yeah? Only by the rich. Yeah. At this time, the Parliament does not represent democracy. But it represents an opposition to the absolute power of the king. So you've got increasing conflict with Parliament at the same time. And also, under James, you have a special conflict with the Catholics, because a small group of Catholics say, hey, we've got another idea. How about we explode the king? And this is the famous Guy Fawkes. In 1605... Guy Fawkes hides under the Houses of Parliament with a lot of gunpowder, and the plan is to kill the king and most of the Parliament. But he is captured, the Parliament is not exploded, and every November, even today, every November in Britain, they have a special festival to celebrate the fact that Guy Fawkes did not succeed in killing the king and Parliament. However, I was in a Catholic family, and I think we were celebrating the fact that he tried. You know, so it's all very contradictory thing. This is the fireworks, etc. Of course, today people do it because it's comme le 14 juillet, on va voir les feux d'artifice. Et l'importance historique, c'est secondaire, quoi. C'est surtout les feux d'artifice, that sort of thing. Okay, so James dies in 1625, and his son Charles I comes along, and Charles I more and more will be wanting to rule as an absolute monarch and to reduce the power of Parliament. He begins to defend Catholics. Charles I begins to defend Catholics because of his idea of a very hierarchical society. And the Parliament begins to rebel. Now, of course, at this time, if the king is not happy with the Parliament, he dissolves the Parliament. So he dissolved the Parliament a few times. But when he wants taxes, when he wants more money for the war against Scotland, then he is obliged to recall the Parliament. And when the Parliament is reformed, they are opposed to the king. I put a short video on the blog about this period, about the beginnings of Cromwell. Now, on the parliamentary side, of course, very quickly there will be a civil war. But nobody wanted a civil war, because civil war is very dangerous. Yeah, first of all, you can lose. And secondly, it's very, very messy. But there seemed to be no possibility to stop the king moving towards absolutism and moving towards Catholicism. And so on the parliamentary side, they said, no, we want to keep our Protestantism, and we want to keep the commercial rise of Britain and the new modern economy. Well, and we don't want absolute power. And absolute power was very real, you know. So I don't like you today, execute him. You know, it's a very, very, very real thing, you know. So they're not looking for democracy, but they're looking for more liberty for the elite. And finally, the king comes with soldiers to the parliament to arrest the leaders who are criticizing him. The king arrives with soldiers, of course. The five people he wants to arrest have disappeared. And he goes away again. And then the parliament says, we want special soldiers in front of the parliament to protect us from the king. Now, in theory, the job of the parliament is to help the king. So if the parliament now has soldiers to stop the king coming with his soldiers, this is the beginning of civil war. Absolutely, the king will go to, I think it's Nottingham or Oxford, and he says, everybody who supports the king, come to join me, and we will form the Royalist Army. And that's the beginning of the Civil War. Now, the Civil War is very bloody. That King Charles I. But perhaps the most important thing about the Civil War is that it changes everybody's ideas. All of the dissenters, many different groups who have radical ideas about religion and about society, they say, hey, now we have no king, this means we can all decide ourselves what kind of society we want. And some of them were very, very radical. The Levellers, one of the leaders of the Levellers was Gerald Winstanley, and here is a quotation from him. England is not a free people till the poor that have no land have a free allowance to dig and labour the commons. These people really go into the idea of so many people are poor and hungry, and the rich have all the land. Let's take the land. So this is, and of course they have a religious explanation for it, but it's revolutionary ideas. So because there is no longer one central church and there is no longer a king, there are 1,000 ideas of what to do next. Now we sometimes call these groups sects. En général, le mot secte c'est un peu bizarre. Moi je suis religieux. Chez moi c'est une église. Chez vous c'est un secte. C'est un peu le mot qu'on utilise pour les autres. And so what we call sects at the time are small religions, very often with very special ideas, very mixed up ideas. You have a group called the Ranters. I love the Ranters. The Ranters are a little bit like the punk rockers of the English Civil War. And the Ranters say, the church says it's bad to swear. Que c'est mauvais de blasphémer. Au contraire. Yeah, it's very good. And sex is wonderful. You should all, but the maximum of sex, this is what God wants. Yeah, and so this is the rant. Yeah, so all these new ideas. That's a slightly extreme example. But many of the groups believed, for example, the king has fallen. This is the beginning of the return of Jesus Christ. Yeah, if you look in the Bible, Apocalypse, yeah, this is going to be the end of the world. And so we need to prepare for Jesus Christ coming back. Yeah, so it's and people believe this very, very firmly. So you get a very large amount or number of new ideas. I'm not going to be able to get to the end of this. And you also get in order to win the Civil War, the Parliament needs to build a big army, and they need an army of people who really want change. Because they understand you. If you lose, you will all be executed. Yeah. This army becomes very democratic. They have very radical political ideas and very radical religious ideas. So, for example, for a whole period, they elect their officers. Ils élisent leurs officiers. essayer de le proposer dans une armée aujourd'hui, ça ne se passerait pas trop bien.
And so you get this interesting situation where the most radical section of society is the parliamentary army. And they are formed to fight against the king, but little by little they will want much more change than the parliament. And so for 10 or 15 years, the army is the force of democracy in England. Now, this is very unusual for us because we think parliament, that's democracy, and the army, oh, that's military dictatorship. It's not the same at this time. At this time, the parliament is only the rich, and the army is ordinary people who are electing their officers and asking for change. So, in fact, the army will be a democratic force. At the end of all this situation, the king is captured and tried. It's very difficult to try the king. Il y a un procès pour juger le roi, and they sort of phone him and say, "Would you like to be the judge for the king?" "Oh, no. Oh no, I'm very busy." Yeah. It was very difficult to find judges, but they did find judges. The king was executed, and you have for 11 years. You have the English Republic, but you can choose the name you give this period. The monarchists say this is the interregnum, 11 years entre deux règnes. The Republic, this is the English Republic. At the time, they used the expression the Commonwealth, la richesse commune. If you go to the Tower of London, there's a very long corridor with every king of England. And you get to 1649. And what happens here in this country? Nothing. Nothing. There's nothing is mentioned. Shh. For 11 years, there was no king in England. It was the English Republic. And next week, I will be continuing with then Protestant England, but particularly the rise of the British Empire and the slow rise of the Industrial Revolution. And we'll be in the 18th and the 19th century there. Thank you for listening.